Thank you to our gracious host.
It's very dramatic, I like that. So, let's talk a little. So recently, for those of you that have seen me in this context over the past couple months by now, will know that I've been focusing on a certain topic called Jewish meditation. Much of which surrounds the ideas of mindfulness, of finding meaning and significance in connecting to the present moment, connecting with your spiritual self right here and right now, and talking about the different Jewish themes that connect to that idea. Now, the idea of meditation and mindfulness is really the idea of searching, or really finding inner peace, finding comfort, releasing stress, right? Getting rid of anxiety. Now, we've run into a bit of a problem, because starting tomorrow morning, we are entering a period of the 3 weeks that is purposely meant to raise your anxiety or stress level, to shake you up a bit and take away some of your inner peace, and in a systematic way, a way that you are slowly building inner tension in yourself to the point where it climaxes in this state of utter grief on Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, where you can't do anything like you normally do, where you're literally not allowed to learn Torah, because that even puts you in a state of happiness or normalcy. Everything has to be removed from what serenity and peacefulness and normal and nice is. So, as much as Jewish meditation and mindfulness and finding inner peace is such an important topic, we can't possibly begin to talk about that now. We actually have to go in the opposite direction. And that's okay. Judaism goes literally in every direction. There's no like pocket of life where it's like, oh yeah, Judaism doesn't deal with that. Judaism is actually all about everything and its opposite. And tonight we're going to talk about opposites, for sure. If you saw the title of the shiur, the title is Galut or Geula, Redemption or Exile or Redemption. Which one is better? It's a very vague question, and it's obviously one where I would say 100% of us already think they know the answer. Right, which one's better? Geula. Redemption. Why would anyone prefer exile? Why would it be an advantage? Someone already thinks they figured it out. Yes?
I'm sad. If you, like, for Geula, in order to happen, we need to be to be in a level where we're supposed to get Geula. And if we are not in that level, yes, there is like the pasuk of Bigdash Hashena.
Right.
It means basically that God will kill and ruin people, basically, until only the worthy will be alive and then, or will suffer, whatever. And
so
then
the suffering part
will come.
Is better? Or the Geula part?
So I'm saying that maybe the Geula part is not that good, because maybe we are the people who will suffer or will die.
So because of Geula, people will suffer. I don't know if it's Geula's fault, necessarily. But you're saying if we did a whole other system entirely where we weren't trying to get to Geula, maybe a lot more people would be alive.
Exactly.
So the system is a bit difficult.
In the Midbar, didn't Bnei Yisrael always like seem like at least they prefer Galut going back to Mitzrayim, not going towards...
Very interesting. So that's a whole topic on its own. But it seemed that there were plenty of times where Jews even preferred a state of unrest. Although, on a very simple level, without getting into that, they were simply, from a materialistic point of view, wanting to go back to a place where they had certain creature comforts. Ironically, being a slave in Egypt doesn't sound like a picture of someone who was comfortable, but in Egypt they had a fridge. like they had food for the next day and the day after. And when did they start complaining? When God said, okay, you're not going to have any food until I drop it to you, and I'm only going to give you exactly enough for that day, and then you're going to be literally nothing in the tank until I decide to give you next. And that was a test. That was hard. So they, and water also, they were always complaining when it came to material comforts. But the spiritual part, I think everyone agreed that the revelations that they experienced, they wouldn't rather go back and be in a state where God was nowhere to be found.
I mean, if you look at gula in an absolute state, I mean, the whole idea of gula is the idea of striving for gula. So once you get to gula, then what? So as far as the mindset, as far as like having what you know you need to work on, once you actually get to the gula, then what you work on, so the idea of the idea of a mindset of trying to get better. Once you hit 100, once you get to gula, then what?
Mm-hmm. So, good. Thank you for that segue into what we're going to discuss first. That we're really talking about redemption and exile, not just in the national sense or historical sense, when it comes to the Jewish people reaching a state of redemption, being in the Jewish homeland of Israel, there being a state of, let's say, world peace or collective acknowledgement of God. But really the idea of being in a state of comfort versus a state of tension or discomfort. And it may seem obvious, or it may seem like a silly question to say, would you rather be comfortable or uncomfortable? Right? And I think that's why the question is strange, to say which one is better. But, as we might find over and over again, and this is a theory, if you find it written up somewhere, that's good, because it means I'm not tricking you all. But it was just a few sources that I thought to throw out there, pique your interest, about maybe there's something going on with this game of Galus and Geula that lies underneath the surface. So the first source I want to bring up, definitely connected to what you were mentioning, is the bracha of one of the sons of Yaakov. Yaakov, at the end of his life, the end of Sefer Bereishit, famously gives a blessing to each of his sons, each of his 12 sons. And if you look closely at those blessings, they're very strange blessings, because they're not like you should have a lot of money, or you should have lots of happiness, or you should have many children, or things like that. It's more like their attributes, their characteristics, how they will be as human beings. Not always great. One of them will say you have a very bad temper, and that will be your challenge for the rest of time, right? So for Yisachar, his son Yisachar, he calls him a chamor. Not the best way to start a bracha, right? Ooh, I get the donkey one. And he says, Vayar minucha ki tov ve'et ha'aretz ki na'ima. He saw rest, comfort, minucha. It is good, and the land, that it is pleasant, that it's good. Vayet shechmo lesbol vayi lemaso ve'et. He essentially got to work, and he put his hands in the ground and got to work. And it's a very strange thing. Like, he saw that comfort was good, so he started to put effort into work, to toil. And the Medrash, if you look at that source of what Minucha is, the Medrash says, Ve'ein Minucha ela Beit HaMikdash Shebo HaTorah. What is Minucha? It's the Beit HaMikdash, the temple where the Torah is in. Shemar zot minuchati ade ad. And what is kito? Vayar minucha kito. He saw that minucha was good. Zet Torah. Shemar ki lekach tov natati lachem. Sorry. So he saw minucha, which was the Beit HaMikdash, is good because the Torah was in it, like I'm assuming in the Aron Kodesh. It's a very interesting thing that the Medrash is trying to weave in here, that Yisachar, who is famously known as the tribe that is almost entirely involved in the study of Torah, their outlook is, I see that the Beit HaMikdash is good, so I'm going to work. I see that comfort is good, and as a result, I'll get to work. Now, it probably would make much more sense if the Pasuk said, or the Bracha said, I see that comfort is good, so I relax. Right? I see that the comfort is good, so I find comfort,
or I strive towards comfort. But instead, it goes the opposite way. I see that comfort is good, and I work harder, and I spend my life working. So here we're kind of setting up these principles. We see that the Beit HaMikdash, which is, I guess, the centerpiece, right? If you look at it, if you think about it linear on a timeline, so it's we're arriving at that destination, or if you see it as kind of in a circle, it's the middle of the circle, it's the centerpiece. And in order to arrive at that, the goal or the means by arriving at that is to work hard. And that's why we talk about Ashrei Mi She'amalo BaTorah, right? That work is inherently a part of Torah, a part of spirituality, a part of learning, a part of growing. That work is not to be, I would say, despised as something that's like a necessary side effect of getting to our goal, but it's actually a desirable component that will allow us to get there. And that's a strange thing. I think, first of all, we live in a world where technology as an institution is basically saying, how do I figure out how to do something while working less? Right? That, if you want to sum up technology, it's how do I get more things done while working less? Just the idea of a car is how do I get all the way over there just moving my foot like that, just doing that, and I could get myself all the way over there, as opposed to like putting a backpack on and having to get on a camel and feed it and all, right? And yet our system is built where I wouldn't say glorify hard work, but we certainly emphasize its significance in its own right. And that's strange, because if you think about the idea of menucha being good, menucha on a spiritual level, and even on a physical level, that being the goal, of being in a place of happiness, of serenity, so then by definition, work shouldn't contribute to that. Work shouldn't help in getting to that. It might be a necessary evil, so to speak, and yet we don't see it that way. We see that work being a positive. Let's zoom out a bit. Let's go a little meta, if you will. Because the whole idea of this world and the next world is also a component of comfort and discomfort of Galut and Gula. Because when it comes to the next world, we by definition don't have a physical body. There is no such thing as physical work. There is no such thing even as spiritual work. You can't, there's no room for serving God in that world, the next world. And there's a famous halacha that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch that discusses that interesting tension between this world and the next world, and how in the next world you can't do any work. Does anyone know what halacha might be hinting to, alluding to?
Shabbos?
If you think about Shabbos in general, it's me'ein olam haba, it's a piece of the next world, it's a taste of the next world, and we're not allowed to do work. Now that work is creative work, not necessarily serving God, but building, creating things, and there's lots of depth to that idea. But there's a lesser known, I would say it's a little more obscure, and maybe I didn't hint to it clearly enough, but there's a halacha regarding walking into a cemetery. Walking into a cemetery where you are among people who are no longer in this world. It's very interesting to think about what that means. Are they there, or is there the last place that they were in this world is there? But there's a special halacha that says when you walk into a cemetery, you are supposed to tuck in your tzitzit. Make sure they are not showing. And what's the reason for this? Who knows?
That you're showing off that you're able to do mitzvot and they're unable to do mitzvot.
Right. So there's a phrase that comes from a pasuk in Mishlei, in Proverbs, that says, lo ei lo resh, which means like mocking the poor, basically. And that is the phrase that the Shulchan Aruch mentions when it says that you're not supposed to go into a cemetery with your tzitzit out. It says, mutar likanes beveit hakvarot vehu lavush tzitzit. And then it says, Vahani mili, kesheha tzitzit migulim.
Aval im hei mechusim mutar. Basically, paraphrasing, right now, you are allowed to walk into a cemetery with your tzitzit as long as they are covered up or tucked in and not exposed, because if they're exposed, it is not allowed. And it says, asur mishum lo'eg la'rash. Basically, we're walking into a place where everyone around us, the non-living souls around us, have no opportunity to serve God through the mitzvot. And for us to walk around saying, hey, look at this, look what I got, we're flaunting our ability to do mitzvot, it's basically mocking the souls there that don't have this amazing opportunity. And I think whenever any of you, if it came to mind, if you know what I'm talking about, if you've heard it before, I think there is a certain idea, a certain aspect of that that makes sense. And the mashal, the parable is walking around a poor person, a homeless person, flaunting your cash, right?
Is that halacha?
What?
Or that's just like common sense?
It's be a good person, for sure.
Yeah.
And yet, think about this concept. And also, if you want to think a step ahead, think about this concept in the context of what we're saying. A person who already did this world and left this world and is now in a state of comfort, a state of geula, their soul has been returned. They are no longer separated from their home base. They are next to God, literally. And they're peeking down and seeing us, our flawed selves, walking around near their burial place with one of the mitzvot hanging out of their shirt. And they're jealous of us, and they're feeling mocked and feeling like, hey, that's not right. Or, man, I wish I could be down here doing a mitzvah. Aren't we the ones that would love to be trading places with them? Like, hey, I would love to get a front seat to whatever's going on up there. Why are we making them jealous? Now, there are a couple answers to this. I'm not saying this without there being an answer. Do you have an answer?
I just find it very hard to accept the idea that Olam Haba is just the idea of paradise in a childish sense of just, you know, sitting there and chilling. I mean, even if you look at, like, you know, the people who are more successful in this world, you know, you read the autobiographies of some, you know, successful people, it's not the money that they do it for. They do it for the challenge to continue going forward. And then
you
look at...
Jewish?
People in general. Like, people generally tend, like, you look at someone like, you know, Bill Gates. Bill Gates doesn't live, I mean, obviously he has a lot of money, but he doesn't live an extraordinary lifestyle. He continues working towards his, on his work. You know, look at other people.
Okay.
I'm saying that when you talk about the idea...
Wait, so what is all about?
That's the question. I mean, I would assume, I mean, the idea, I think that maybe we could make a distinction of when you were as a person downstairs, when you work, you do it in order to gain a higher level of sort of understanding of what it is to be a neshama, which could propel you to higher levels of further hitkadmut b'olam haba. The idea of, you know, the further, you know, because I think the closer you are to God, the closer you are to learn to revealing the secrets. But the idea of just, you know, ceasing to work, that just doesn't sound very exciting.
Well, there is a fact, which is you can't do anything in that world. There is no such thing as doing.
No such thing as physical doing. No such thing as getting reward for the doing.
No, getting, you can, that's okay. Getting is allowed. Doing, it's not possible. You can't do there. There is no vehicle by which you can do so.
I mean, you know, not just the source I spoke about earlier, the Gemara Makos, Tanakh Levena, Mulcha, Filo Balam Haba, I think it's the Ramchal brings up the idea that they continue working towards.
So there are ideas like Rachel Nevaka Albana, for example. Rachel, who is no longer alive, is crying for her kids down here, that there is some sort of connection between what's going on up there and what's going on down here. Now, there's certainly truth to that, there must be. The question is, on an individual level, our individual soul is not there. Do we have jobs? Do we have opportunities to advance either ourselves or other people in some way? Unclear. Unclear. If you look at the purest, I would say simplest form of the relationship, I would compare it to fun zone. Have any of you been to a place called Fun Zone? It could be called something else. In Teaneck, where I grew up, there was a place called Sports World, which was one of the nearest and dearest places to my heart. It has been closed down for a while now.
Like,
it is a place
for adults?
It's Chuck E. Cheese's.
For children, but adults like it too.
Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese's. I'm talking about my 8th grade, my 8-year-old
yeah.
birthday.
Oh, okay. But
a place where you walk in, there are games, there are opportunities to get tickets, and then when the party's over, you go over to the high school dropout counter over there, and you get your spider necklace and your soldier parachute and a slinky that breaks before you leave the room. And that is the relationship between the games and your real life. You try and play to get as many tickets. Once the playing is over, you collect using those tickets and you move on, right? So Olam Hazeh is the games, Olam Haba is the counter. Right, and you receive, and you can't play anymore. The game time is over. Right, on a very simple level. So, in that context, one could say, okay, well, of course, the kid who gets to the counter and has 495 tickets, and sees the Walkman. Yes, there were Walkmen back then, for 500 tickets, and you're like, well, if I could only have two more minutes with Whack-A-Mole, I would have gotten 5 tickets and be able to get the Walkman. Yeah, there's jealousy there. There is a sense of, yeah, the kid walking by, flaunting all his tickets, yeah, that would make him jealous because he would want to get to a higher place if we're going to plug it into the nimshel of us and our soul and our spiritual reward. So we want more reward and more reward. And at the same time, maybe once you're there, so where do you need to go? But why are you running so hard to get somewhere else?
So I wonder if, like, we would even, if your whole life is about reward, if you would even like the reward you're given. Meaning, like, if someone's so reward focused, they're probably thinking very much like this world type of reward. Like, even though they're saying spiritual, are they really going for the, like, if you're really serving Hashem, like, based on the reward Hashem's going to give you, I'm not
100%.
Yeah, not 100% positive you're going to enjoy, like, more spirituality, more closeness to Hashem, more things like that we don't really think about in this world.
You're serving yourself, essentially, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That's why that mushel goes much deeper, because there are other types of games in the sports world. There are the big ones where you pay lots of money and you get no tickets, right? Like the big Madden ones or the big fighting ones, where you're like 6 tokens to play one game, and then you're out, and then but you're like, that was awesome.
And the jackpot games just keep going.
Yeah, you just go, right? So there are no tickets involved whatsoever, right? So that's like a serving yourself kind of situation. But I agree, and that's why there's a deeper concept of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, which I don't want to get into because this is a great topic to talk about, which is the reward is what you did. The concept is you don't trade in your tickets for the reward. It's what you got out of what you did here is the reward. Think about it as if you're dating God. If you spend your lifetime dating God, long distance, right? So when you get to heaven and it's just a candlelight dinner with you and God for eternity, that will probably be very enjoyable if you've been long distance dating and texting and everything 3 times a day, right? But if you spend your whole day like, I'm sorry, I got no time for this, I'm going to go watch Monday Night Football and get my hair did or something like that, then you suddenly show up and it's like you and this awkward blind date forever. So what you do here is the reward. It's you built it. It's yours, right?
Gratification versus remorse, you're saying, as far as...
There is an idea that the whole concept of reward and punishment in the other world is simply what you did here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? One of my favorite ideas that I love to say. In the next world, there is no heaven or hell, there is only God. To some people, God is heaven. To other people, God is hell. Think about that. Right? So, where were we?
Sports world.
Right. So why would there be people, if the whole destination that we're going to is the next world, why would there be any reason to look back and say, if only I could go back and put on a 4-cornered garment for a couple minutes. That you're only doing that to get where you are right now. Right? It's like getting off the plane to your honeymoon and saying, like, oh, if only I could get on a plane again. Like, you're at the honeymoon. You're here. This is where you were going the whole time to get to this place. Hall of Fame, right? Well, now, you're understanding that there is an answer to this. There is a point in this, which is maybe even though that's the destination, it can still be the destination but not be the goal. And those two ideas have to somehow coexist. That we have an ultimate purpose in our life, and it's to get there, and at the same time, getting there isn't the goal. And it sounds like an oxymoron, and that's why we actually may have a question on our hands of which is better, Gola or Gula. I want to raise two more sources, and then we'll try and put some meaning to all of this. One is a Gemara that maybe you have heard before that is also confusing and is on the same topic that we're going to talk about, our forefathers. Tana Rabbanan, this is Gemara in Erevin, Yud Gimel Amabet, 13b. Shtei Shanim Umechza Nechleku Beit Shammai Ubeit Hillel. 2.5 years, the schools of Shammai and Hillel argued on one specific topic. Halala Omrim, one side would say, Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra, yoser mishen nivra. It is better, it is more comfortable, it's interesting, take the word Noach to heart. Noach like menucha. It is better in some way that man, if man had never been created, more so than if he had been created, which he was. The Halala Omrim, and the other side says, Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra, Yoter Mishalo Nivra, and it is better, the other side says, that we were created more so than if we had never been created. We could talk for hours on what this argument is based on. It's just three lines in the Gemara, and then they move on. And we're like, wait, we're just debating the meaning of life and if existence really matters or not, and we're just gonna like just continue drinking our tea. Ninu Vagamru, they've literally, it says they voted and concluded. What do you think?
It's worse than man was ever created.
Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra yoser mishen nivra. Better if we weren't created at all.
Because he is created.
That's depressing. Akshav shenivra, now that we're created though, yifash v'esh b'masav, we should check our actions. Check yourself. So that you make sure you're doing the right thing in this world because it's better than you. Now, many questions on this. Is anyone else bothered by this whole conversation? I think it boils down to one major question, but maybe if you could think about your question in one sentence, what would it be? You could spit out, spit fire. Anyone?
How could they know that?
How could they what?
How could they know that?
How could they know the answer to this question?
Why would God create us?
Why
would it be worse that we were?
Good. I like that question the best. Yeah, but other questions also.
I have to say that when you spoke about that, I thought about the thing is that like. I think like Beit Shammai think that this way because they think that like the poor people are bad basically somehow.
Mm-hmm.
In their basic needs or whatever. Then because of that they say lots of the people won't be able to work on themselves to be in a better place, and in then they will be like in hell and not in heaven, and this why it's better that they won't be created from the beginning.
Good, so it's funny because it doesn't say explicitly which side says what. It says halalu v'halalu. You gotta take every word to heart here. We're talking about the Gemara, they don't waste words, they don't do things.
I was clear.
But it could be, you're right, because that's the right order. It says Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel, and this is the first one, so maybe it does correspond to Beit Shammai. Better that we weren't created. Why? Because coming down here, you probably got a 5% chance to do it right. Maybe I'm even overshooting it, right? If we're never supposed to mess up, and the proof is that for never supposed to mess up is any time you mess up, you get punishment, unless you do tshuva, which you always can, so it's all good. But you're never supposed to mess up. How many people have never messed up? I think it's 3, and it's not so clear.
I was 3.
Right? And not even those people, we're not supposed to even consider how we could possibly get to that, right?
So
one argument is, okay, it's not worth the challenge. The challenge is far too great. Now Hillel, perhaps if we're going to plug this in, is the optimist, saying, hey, come on, guys. We can do this. Let's be creative. Now, my favorite question here is, why don't we check with the creator of the world to see what he thought was a better idea? And he went with, it's better that we were created. How are human beings able to decide if God made a mistake or not? That's kind of weird. That's kind of a weird thing. We could wonder. I think it's okay for us to ask the question. Asking the question, I don't have a problem with. Answering the question, big problems. Big problems. I don't want to go into it too much. I would love for you to be tormented by this more and research it yourself. I would be very happy if that happened. But what I am trying to take from this, in this context, is for some reason, according to this argument, it's better for us to never be... It is better, according to this discussion, that we never left our home base, that we never leave our state of comfort. Think about the word noachlo. It is more comfortable. It is more comfortable. It is better had we never left that state of comfort than now that we had left and be in this state of constant tension between our body and our soul, between right and wrong, constantly getting it wrong, constantly having to fix it, constantly having to believe instead of know forever until we die, right? And yet, knowing that because God did create us, that there was obviously a far superior reason that we'd be alive than that we had never been created. And do you see how this discussion builds this tension? It's better that we weren't created, but we were created, so that's also better. It's Geula is better, but God decided that Geulus is better because he created us and took us out of our state of Geula, our soul connected to God, sitting around him, having a campfire, and he just ripped us away from that and put us in the middle of the woods. So God thinks Geulus is better, man thinks Geula is better. If you think about it that way. Or at least God thinks that Geulus is more important than Geula, or has a far greater purpose than Geula.
Well, maybe not far greater, but just has purpose.
Well, Geula also probably has purpose, but we're saying that if you're going to weigh the two, the fact that God chose the way that humanity should exist is only in a state of Geulus. Right. If you think about it in terms of your soul, then God wants you to be in Geulus as your state of existence. So let's go back to the beginning of Judaism, and then we'll put it together like I said. I'm fascinated, as should every Jew be, but I just, whatever we get to say for Gracious, which we're not in at all, I always get a little giddy and excited because the psychologist in me just jumps for joy because it's about people and it's about struggles and it's about not understanding and it's about inner turmoil and it's about psychology, spirituality. It's like, yeah, it was written for me to enjoy. We're almost there. We're getting there. Varm is also very cool psychologically. The psychoanalysis of one man's journey through life. Should read it. Bestseller. Now.
Like
Freudian? Yeah. Avram Avinu, given all these missions, given tests, seems to pass them all. He's like the textbook Jew, just nails it every time, right? Yitzchak, not a whole lot in the book about him. Probably the most famous story about Yitzchak is actually about his father Avraham, and how Yitzchak was a supporting actor in that story. And yet the whole story is named after him, except it's about how he almost died, and then he didn't die, but he had like 1.5 lines, right? And then like a couple of random stories about digging wells and his wife and Plishtim, and then he's already almost dead and messes up the whole prophecy, right? Interesting. Yaakov, magnum opus. His whole life is dissected from when he was a boy. We only encounter Avram when he's later and he leaves and all those things happen. Yaakov, we know what happens before he's even born. There's a story about Yaakov. And he grows up and he has to leave and one problem after another and one issue and dreams and everything going upside down for Yaakov. And in the end, he transforms into a person named Yisrael. He has 12 sons who are called Bnei Yisrael, and that name sticks. And that's what we're called. And that's what this country is called. And there's this unbelievable connection between the word Yisrael and Yashar Kel, and on a Kabbalistic level, between the destiny of the world and Jew. That word, after this man's name, the first time we see it is his name, it's like he steals the show of the three. And if you think about the ranking in terms of the importance, it's silly to do this. It's like a complete eighth grade boy thing to do, to like rank the Avos. But Yaakov clearly takes the cake. We hear more of him than anyone else. We're all named after him. Avram is the first Jew. Avram is the trailblazer. Avram is the father of all religions. And then there's Yitzchak, who's very holy, I imagine. But what's going on with him? Now, there's a very interesting Gemara, which I'll paraphrase. It goes as follows. Hashem goes to Avram Avinu. They're trying to understand a certain pasuk in the Gemara. Ki ata Avinu ki Avraham lo yadanu v'Yisrael lo yakirenu. Ata Hashem Avinu goalenu mi'olam shemecha. There's a pasuk that says, the angels are saying to Hashem, you are Father Avraham. We don't know Yisrael, we don't recognize, and you, God, are our Redeemer, forever is your name. Weird. Well, we don't know Avram, we don't recognize Yaakov. So what does that mean? And the story goes as follows. God goes to Avram and says, your children, the Jewish people, have sinned. And Avram says, please forgive them out of the holiness and the purity of your name. And it seems that God didn't buy that answer. So he goes to Yaakov and he says, your children have sinned. And Yaakov says the same exact answer. Please, out of the sanctity of your name, remove their sins. No dice. Goes to Yitzchak. And I love these movie scene like Gemaras and Midrashim. Goes to Yitzchak and he said, your children have sinned. And Yitzchak's like, my children? They're your kids too. Literally, that's what he says. And then he says, and if you want to tell me they sinned, it's their fault? Look what you did to them. Look at this. At the very least, we're only taking 50% of the blame. Straight to the Gemara. And the answer to that question is the answer to that argument is the angels say, oh, we know that God is the redeemer of the Jewish people. Why? Because Yitzchak forced God to have to redeem them himself. And it wasn't in his merit, and it wasn't in Avram and Yaakov's merit. It was turning God's own argument against him so that God had no choice but to redeem. Now, what do we know about Yitzchak? Yitzchak symbolizes what midah?
Tzedakah?
I've never heard that before. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Gevurah.
I've heard of Gevurah. That's fascinating. I want to ask about that after. Where did that from? Gevurah is something on a Kabbalistic level that Yaakov is known to be. Gevurah meaning strength, but not in terms of physical strength, but inner strength, being able to hold back, which is the sign of Gevurah, Ezev, Gibor HaKovesh et Yitzro, one who subdues his own will. And that's why we don't hear a lot about Yitzchak, because what makes Yitzchak so special is he doesn't do a lot. He holds back from doing. One of the most famous things that he holds back from doing, and it's actually because he was commanded to do so by God, was to never leave Eretz Yisrael. Something very ironic and frustrating happens to Avram. Avram's first commandment that we know of was to go leave your homeland and move to Eretz Yisrael, the first Oleh.
And he makes Aliyah, and what's the first thing that happens? There's a famine in Israel, so he has to leave Israel. Imagine. I mean, it's probably not too crazy to think about, anyone who's made Aliyah in this room. You get here, and you're like, oh, there's no food, or there's no AC, or there's, I can't get my 2.0 for some reason, or whatever. You need to kick me out. That's what happened to Avram. Yaakov, he grew up, he thought he was doing great, and then some little mix-up, and his brother wants to murder him, so he has to leave for 22 years. And then when he gets back, it only gets worse because of his daughter and the rape and Yosef, and then he ends up living the rest of his life after that outside of Israel. Definitely not someone who stays in Eretz Yisrael. Yitzhak, who actually has a reason to leave Eretz Yisrael because there's a famine again, God says, no, 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 you're not going to leave Israel like the rest of them. You're going to stay. Yitzhak is a man who doesn't, so to speak, advance or work towards something. He's already there. God said, you're already in Eretz Yisrael, don't leave. It's like you're already in a state of Geula. Don't start working like the other ones. Don't start getting all tense and uncomfortable. You're in a state of comfort, you're meant to stay there. And this actually goes in line with that, because God is looking for an answer to how to save the Jewish people, and Yitzchak's answer is, I'm not going to do anything, you do it. It's your issue, not mine. I'm not working towards that. I'm not going to fight for them. They're your issue. And what's interesting is we don't follow, so to speak, in the ways of Yitzchak as much as we do with Avram and Yaakov. Not that we don't, but clearly the stories that we're supposed to gain from and apply, the ones that were emphasized and elaborated upon, were the ones where we had to struggle, where Yaakov had to be in exile, and he had to work for years to his wife, and then another wife, and then he had to deal with these family issues. That's Yisrael, that's the Jewish people. So what's interesting is we see that Yitzchak never left Eretz Yisrael, and there's a funny, interesting Gemara about Yaakov. Four words, Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis. There's an idea that Yaakov never died. Now, there's plenty of statements in the Torah that say that he, actually, that the whole Gemara comes from the fact that it says Vayigva, that he, but it doesn't say Vayamas, that he dies. It's that he returned, but he didn't die. And every other time it says that someone dies, it says the word Vayamas, but and he died, but by Yaakov it doesn't say, and he died. And the Gemara, there's an opinion in the Gemara that wants to say, and from here we know that Yaakov Avinu never died. Now, it can't possibly mean that he's physically around somewhere, because no one ever lived that long.
And he was, what's it called, mummified?
Yeah, that's what they said. They mummified him, and they brought him to Amarat HaMachpelah, and there was a whole procession. Yeah.
Aren't there a few people who they say never died? Moshe.
We're coming up to Pinchas, who we say was given the gift of eternal, yeah, and Eliyahu HaNavi, I don't know. But the concept of Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis, think about it in this concept. This is what I just figured out right as the shiur started, but I apologize. What does it mean to never die? Where do you never go if you never die? This is an easy one. Olam Haba. You never get to your destination. Your whole existence is still in a state of, I'm working towards, I'm working harder, I'm trying more. And what Yaakov Avinu represented was, it's not about the destination. He ended his life not where he was supposed to be. He ended his life in the beginning of exile. Yeah. As if to say, if you're a Jew, then your world is a world of Yaakov, where the destination is there, and that's fine, but maybe it's only so that you have something to work towards. But the work is what you're supposed to be doing. The struggle, the tension, the discomfort is why I created you. That discomfort, that struggle, that tension has meaning because I created an endpoint, a destination. But don't get fooled and think that that's where you're supposed to go. That's the point of it. It's kind of an oxymoron. There are two more ideas and then we'll finish. Thought of one more. I was only had one more, but there's two more. One I said in my own. It's a famous Chavetz Chaim Dvar Torah on the words
In Bechukosai Teilecha, the beginning of Parshat Bechukosai. And he hones in on the word Teilechu. When we talk about doing mitzvos, usually we say the words doing, ta'asu, or we say the words tishmeru, right? Or even tishmeru, to listen to them, to follow them. But teilechu is a weird word to say, go with my chukos. And he points out that for anyone who's either been to or had a siyum, made a siyum in the Gemara, in a volume of Gemara, they say the words Anu Amelim Vehem Amelim. Right? We work hard and they work hard. And it's this paragraph in the context of exalting those that are involved in Torah study as opposed to those that aren't. And we say, we work hard and they work hard. Anu Amelim Umekablim Schar Vehem Amelim Ve'in Umekablim Schar. We work hard and get reward, and they work hard and they don't get reward. And the Chafetz Chaim asks, that makes no sense. They work hard and they don't get reward? Bill Gates worked hard. Did he get a reward? I think he got several billion of rewards. And I think it's still working out for him quite all right. There are plenty of people that aren't Torah studiers that work hard and get plenty of reward. So what could this possibly be talking about? So he says there's one important distinction. When it comes to the rest of the world, the reward that you get isn't for working hard. The reward you get is if that hard work results in an accomplishment. There are plenty of people that tried to do what Bill Gates did. Probably thousands. Maybe even tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands by now. There's only one Bill Gates. There are plenty of people that tried to start something like Facebook. I don't know if you guys even know that there was something called MySpace once. It was really creepy. But it was the exact same thing. It's people get to make your own page and you get to chat with strangers. And it was great. And then it disappeared off the face of the universe. Right? Zuckerberg came up with a good idea. Now he's a bajillionaire. The reward that these people got was for the accomplishment. It worked out. It succeeded. Plenty of other people worked just as hard as them and did not succeed. When it comes to us, Torah learners, Jews, children of Yaakov, we get reward for working. The system is really strange that way. God does not check our accomplishments. The boss does not see the results, if there was profit or not. He just wants to see if you're working hard. So if you're learning in the context of learning Torah, but you don't remember anything, but you didn't get the answer to the question you were trying to find, you were just as successful in terms of receiving reward as the person who's maybe smarter or more capable and found the answer to the question. And what that says is there's an emphasis on the effort, the means, the work, and a de-emphasis on the destination. On the state of Geula, on the resolution to the problem. It doesn't really matter if I got there. The whole discussion was based on a question that we're trying to answer. It doesn't really matter if I answered the question. That sounds like if we're talking about a state of Geulos and a state of Geula, God cares more about the Geulos. I just bothered a few people. Yes.
How can we say that that's the ideal, though? Because the only reason why we work now is it all started with Adam HaRishon. Because Adam HaRishon sinned, therefore we have to work the land, therefore we have to do these things, therefore it was almost like a b'dieved site, like,
that wasn't
the ideal. The ideal was everything was brought for us, we had all the answers.
Or was it?
Unless we were supposed to.
Now think about that. I wasn't going to bring this up, but think about that in the context of the Hillel and Shammai discussion. What is better, that we were created or that we weren't created? The answer in the discussion in the Gemara is that we weren't created. But now that we were, we got to work hard. We got to do the right thing. Now, here's a historical version of this conversation. What was better, that everything comes to us easily or not? Well, clearly the plan A was that everything comes to us easily. And then one guy messed up and the rest of mankind now has to work hard. So it sounds like the plan A is better, obviously.
because it was plan A. But what if plan A was never meant to be the plan? And it was just there for us to see as an ideal. But we were never actually supposed to live that way. Food for thought.
Yeah.
Think about it.
In that same...
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah.
In that same Panaralap, it also says, Heimrachsen Vanarachsen, Heimrachsen Lurashapad Vanarachsen, Matayal on the bus. There is a destination that we're trying to...
Yeah.
Destination.
We're running. It's a good point. I need to bring it up with Chafetz Chaim. That's going to be a difficult one, though. We're running to Olam Haba. We're running. It's a good point. It's a good cop. Yeah.
Another thing that we said already during the lecture here, that like the evil people that didn't do anything, basically like before they died, they can say like "Lachzor b'tshuva," and that's it.
So they didn't really work.
Exactly.
Well.
Might
not be measured in quantity. I would say the answer is lies somewhere there. It might not be.
Right.
I think in the regular sense of work, so if you work hard, that obviously leads to more results because someone worked harder. But in the world of spirituality, quality might be more important than quantity. There is, you're talking about several stories where we say, Yesh Misha Kona Olamo Basha Achas.
Yeah.
There's someone who's able to acquire their entire share in the world to come with one moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard thing. What do you say to the tzaddik who spends his whole life living dirt poor on the floor and doing the right thing?
What do you say to other people that he caused them to suffer?
Right. So, to a certain extent, I'm going to leave that up to God. I'm not going to claim that I know the answer to that. But maybe that one moment for that person was as difficult as a lifetime for that person. Maybe. Last point, which is the most abstract of them all, so I can leave you as confused as I possibly can. Just based on the shiur in the Ramban al Torah that I heard, must be 15 years ago by now, that just stuck with me, and I try to tell it all the time. Why was this world created? From what I understand, there are two options, and we actually mention them three times a day. In a three-word phrase that we say at the end of the first paragraph of Shmona Esrei. Lema'an Shemo, comma, be'ahava. Those seem to be the two options. Let's start with the second one. You know what? Let's start with the first one. Makes more sense. Leman Shemo, for his name, which really means to do what he created us to do. We say also in Tefillah, in the end of the Valetzion prayer, Baruch Hu Elokeinu, Shebra'anu, Lechvodo. That's a pretty straightforward answer. Why were we created? Well, blessed are you, God, who created us to honor him. It sounds like the role of our existence is to honor God. Pretty straightforward, correct? Now I'm going to show you why that makes absolutely no sense. And it's very simple why it makes no sense. God created us because he needed us to serve him? Does God need us to do anything? Does God need anything? Does God need? No. So in 1 second, it just became impossible that that's the right answer. Right? Can you still figure out how that's a good answer? That God created us to serve him? How could that possibly be the reason why God created us? It can't. I would love for you to chime in and explain to me why I'm wrong. I'm going to assume then that you all agree with me. Now then we get to the second answer, Bahava, out of love. God created us out of love. God is a giving, ever-loving God. And this, everything you see here was created with us in mind for our own benefit. And there's nothing else to it. It's as if he created an all-you-can-eat buffet, candy store, however you want to call it, and he placed us in it, and that's the point of all of this. No real objective, no real goal, except for us enjoying ourselves with love. Now this is
more complicated than I'm making it sound. Read the first chapter of Masila Isharm for more on that. But how could these two concepts exist? Because they do exist. I just quoted you reputable sources about how both of these ideas exist, and like I said, they exist in the same sentence in our Shmona Esrei. So don't keep dominating Shmona Esrei until you figure out this problem. And the answer is
both.
Now, how could it be both? It's not really both, because again, the minute you say lechvodo for God's honor, you can't continue there, because that implies God means something and he doesn't. So it can't be that that's equally as good an answer. So the real answer is out of love. All of this is for us. But the only way that this could be out of love is if we had meaning and purpose. Because if you sat in a candy store all day, or whatever you could dream up, imagine if you did the staycation for winter break model, and you're like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm not going to get out of PJs for 8 days, right? That day three, day four, I don't know which day it is, but you're like, shoot, I got to get out of this place, right? I got to go somewhere. And imagine that for eternity. So God created a system where it's not possible for him to need something from us. So if you take yourself out of your life and this world, you'll realize God doesn't need any of this. This is all meaningless. Now imagine if everyone walked around saying, this is all meaningless. There's actually a guy that did reach that conclusion and wrote about it. It's a sefer called Kohelet. Right? Everything is just stupid and meaningless because it's all for one thing, right? Now the way that God infused our existence with meaning is by making us, by giving us a mission. By saying, no, you're uniquely here because you need to bring something special into this world to serve me. And without you, there's a little something missing from this world. The idea of Kaddish, when someone passes away, is that a certain force in this world, an energy in this world, a purpose was taken away, and now the people most closely related to you have to fill that void by bringing God's name into the world more, by saying this prayer every day. It's filling that gap. So, even though we could say, yeah, the whole point is just to chill with God, there's no way to say that that's the point of this world. Because this world is about bringing something else that didn't exist yet, about honoring God, about fulfilling a mission, about getting somewhere. And ironically, if we learn from Yaakov, it's not even about where you're going afterwards, it's about right here and right now, a state of unrest. While it would make sense to say that the ideal is that we don't have the 3 weeks every year, and the ideal is that we don't exist in a state of avelut every year, and don't get me wrong, I'm waiting for that to happen. It should happen by tomorrow, ideally. The fact that it happens year after year, the fact that the majority of history has dealt with these 3 weeks, as opposed to the opposite, where we dealt with only Beis HaMikdash and Eretz Yisrael, means that maybe we need 3 weeks of the year to remind ourselves that this is what we're here for. We're here to be uncomfortable. We're here to not get so complacent in things are okay and things are good. And not even to the point where we should want to just be comfortable. Because then we're not in this world anymore. We're in a different world. We're in Olam Haba. We get to taste that one day a week. We get to remember. But we're here so that we can remind ourselves we have more to do. When you find yourself in a state of stress or discomfort, say, I'm exactly where I need to be. This is exactly what I'm supposed to be like here, because if I was chill, then what am I doing here? My favorite mashal to that is the pulse. What's the sign in the EKG machine that you're alive? And what's the sign where you're dead? Is everything's just smooth sailing. So that's what we're here for. We're here to have those ups and downs. And that means that these 3 weeks, of course, are an opportunity to reflect on in terms of the destruction and to mourn, and that's what these halachos of the 3 weeks are for. But even more so to remind ourselves that we are in a state of destruction or construction, if you think about it. Of not being built yet. And this is a time to ask ourselves, not just about these 3 weeks, but moving forward throughout the year, what can I do day to day that I can make sure I'm rebuilding, or that I'm building, so to speak, myself, the world around me, and ultimately getting ourselves to that goal. So hopefully, if this wasn't a complete mess for this year,
that's great.
We will succeed on an individual level, on a communal level, national level, not necessarily only getting to the goal, but of getting more comfortable being uncomfortable. Where we are in this world.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's not such a big, I mean, happy everyone's here. Here I shall, we'll be another shiur next week.